This audio story contains discussions of domestic violence and family violence, which may be distressing for some listeners. It runs at a length of approximately 30 minutes, and we encourage you to explore a number of community supports and resources which are listed on the web posts accompanying this piece. Reference from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police's Intimate Partner Violence Resource page. If you are a victim or survivor of family violence, know that it is not your fault and you are not alone. You can call 911 or the local police department if you fear for your safety or that of your children. This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. We're looking at the rates from 2024 to 2025. Again, earlier data would probably be best referenced then from other city council meetings, things like that, to determine statistics. But is this part of a greater trend we're seeing? Is this 15% indicative of something that's been growing for a while? Or
yeah, just say from back to 2020 to 2025, there has been a gradual increase in reporting of domestic violence here in the city.
That's Constable Jenna Moore of the Prince George RCMP Detachment's Domestic Violence Unit. According to data collected by the Prince George RCMP and presented to City Council January 2026. Among that data, reported incidents of domestic violence are on an uptick. The data, released annually at Prince George City Council meetings, can be publicly accessed through the City of Prince George's City Council meeting minutes. Reports of domestic violence were up 15% locally here in Prince George, Clayley, Tanay, in 2025 compared to 2024. When we talk about domestic violence, terms such as intimate partner violence, family violence, and gender-based violence often enter the conversation. Constable Jenna Moore and Corporal Jennifer Cooper explain.
Within the context of RCMP's records and reporting and things like that, between gender-based violence, domestic violence, is there a differentiation there that goes into statistics and things like that?
So domestic violence is violence done within like a family unit. It does not have to be spouse for spouse. It could be partner versus maybe an elder in the home. It could be parent versus child. Gender-based violence is violence against a person due to their gender identity, gender expression. So that's not just specifically male versus female. And then intimate partner violence is violence against anyone who is in a relationship, intimate relationship, current or past.
Doesn't take a lot of imagination to see how these three things are interrelated.
Gender-based violence, though, doesn't necessarily have anything to do with a relationship between victim and offender, whereas domestic violence and intimate partner violence are predicated on the basis that there is a relationship there, as Constable Moore said. So either, you know, your intimate partners, so your boyfriend, girlfriend, or living together, common law, whatever you might be, or you're in a family unit together. So there's some sort of familial relationship there. Whereas gender-based violence is violence against a person solely based on how their gender presents to society. So that could be against the LGBTQ community or the queer community. It could be someone who is transitioning, or it could be someone just because they present as female or are female. It doesn't necessarily have a relationship component to it.
That was Constable Jenna Moore of the Domestic Violence Unit alongside Corporal Jennifer Cooper, both of the Prince George RCMP Detachment. Clearly, there are distinctions between these types of violence. But let's turn to Vivica Ellis, Executive Director at the Center for Family Equity, for some clarification.
Is there kind of an umbrella term to the interrelated but separate instances of intimate partner violence, gender-based violence, and domestic violence? Are they ever, you know, referred to kind of in the same category?
That's a really good question. I think the language truly matters. And what I can say to answer that is that in our Family Law Act, it refers to family violence And while we use that term, and that term is usefully broad, we do like to draw attention to the fact that the majority of intimate partner violence perpetrated is against women and people who are gender diverse. And so, and the majority of it is intimate partner violence. Family violence is a broader category that would encompass all forms of, let's say, abuse taking place between family members. And so we do use intimate partner violence as well, because we're referring in most cases to specifically that. And I would say that the majority of intimate partner violence and family violence is gender-based violence. And we can never obscure or ignore that gendered reality. In order to address it, make it seen, listen to survivors, and look at all the services and supports that need to be in place, we have to specifically acknowledge and understand that gendered nature of how it's occurring.
That's Vivica Ellis, Executive Director at the Center for Family Equity, a nonprofit that operates in British Columbia, advocating for policy change in order to address family poverty, which includes increasing access to legal aid. Of course, we would like to know why rates of reported domestic violence are rising in Prince George, Clathey-Tanay. So far, the reasons are speculative, but the Prince George RCMP was able to provide comment. For that, we return to Constable Jenna Moore.
So in that meeting, one of the potential causes identified was the drop in the employment rate locally, regionally. But more research has to be done to verifiably say this without a doubt. But what are some probable factors for this rise in your view?
Yeah, that's definitely, it's really hard to pinpoint what exactly is causing the increase in reporting of domestic violence. Maybe simply just the awareness of domestic violence in the community and the empowerment or encouragement for victims to come forward and report what's going on in an intimate relationship, any family violence in a home unit, whatever it could be. A recent separation, maybe just time and space away from the intimate partner, maybe allows the victim to feel safer to come forward as well. Financial struggles. There's so many reasons why or what could cause the uptick in reporting.
Regardless of what the direct causal factors may actually be, this is a topic that the government pays attention to the extent that a number of statistics are available. According to a Canadian federal government fact sheet on intimate partner violence, it is evident that family violence is disproportionately perpetrated by men against women. While anyone can be a victim, and both men and women commit domestic abuse, the severity and frequency of this violence heavily impacts women, and much of it goes unreported. 2019 federal data indicated that 80% of people who had experienced intimate partner violence did not report it to police. Some of the reasons cited for remaining silent around the issue were the belief that abuse is a private or personal matter, the incident was not perceived to be important enough to report, the fear of stigma or shame, and also the fear of court system intervention or lack of trust in the criminal justice system. A recent development that could help to address those last two factors, the fear of court system intervention and general lack of trust in it, is developing locally here in Prince George, Clathey-Tanay. As it pertains to prosecuting criminal charges in this area, Legal Aid BC, the provincial Crown Corporation, which offers legal services to people in the province who cannot afford to privately hire a lawyer for their own legal representation, is opening two new offices, or family law centers, one in Kamloops and one in Prince George, with new full-time staff. Vivica Ellis, the executive director at the Center for Family Equity, can fill us in on the significance of this development. The Center for Family Equity is a nonprofit operating primarily out of their Vancouver office, but offering services across the province, including Northern BC. Ms. Ellis' organization has a focus on ending child, youth, and family poverty in the province, advocates for increased services, and does so through focusing on policy, alternatives, and changes that benefit families. Ms. Ellis, thank you so much for joining us today. Compared to 2024, rates of reported domestic violence here in Prince George, Clathey-Tanay rose 15% in 2025. Is this a trend that within your work you've noticed happening elsewhere as well? Or is, you know, Prince George unique in this?
I would say that Prince George is not unique in this sense. I think overall, we do understand it is increasing. However, I would say that this recent expansion on the part of Legal ABC is a part of the solution that we need. So we need to focus on the negative, what is taking place, how it's taking place, whether or not it is increasing. At the same time, putting a lot of time and attention into making these moves around building better services, because access to justice is absolutely essential to address the harms of intimate partner violence. And without access to justice, outcomes are hugely impacted for families, for protection orders, for parenting arrangements, all of the things that are very complicated by intimate partner violence. We're hoping for better outcomes when somebody, when an at-risk family has access to the legal representation and access to justice to really solve their issues. And the huge risk is that it can proliferate and it can get worse and it goes unaddressed and people without the right support can't protect themselves. They don't have access to lawyers. They can't get the protection orders, the restraining orders they need. But not only that, they don't have access to really remedying the outcomes around custody and parenting and the complexities that are there. So I would say that these expansions and building on these models is really a huge part of addressing an extremely alarming uptake, but it is an important part of the response.
As I understand from your statement, to distill it a little bit, it kind of seems that part of the solution basically is having actionable consequences for perpetrators, and this access to justice enables those consequences to actually be implemented. Is that not such a bad summary?
Absolutely. I think it gets very complicated when children are in the mix in terms of access to them, in terms of their legal rights to their security and safety and protection of them, where they live, day-to-day parenting, school, even, you know, religion. All of these huge parenting issues are very complex when there's intimate partner involved. And also, you know, litigation abuse is something that can take place. So I would say that, yes, access to remedies like lawyers and pathways that support people to go through the family law system mean that, yes, there may be criminal cases going on at the same time. And we want much more training for judges and for lawyers and trauma-informed approach. And we want to see people held accountable for their behavior, but we also need to look at the deep amount of support that people need when it comes to carrying on with parenting and very vulnerable children and youth in the mix and how all that plays out. So yes to consequences and deterring, but also we need to really bolster this quite unseen support that people don't often know much about around our family law system and how much support it takes to find those meaningfully stabilized outcomes for people.
Previous to these two offices opening in the province, where was the northernmost Legal Aid BC office that offered a family law center for, say, people in Prince George who needed to access their services? Where was the closest physical destination?
Oh, that's a very good question. I would say the family law center model was rolled out in 2024. And at that time, they established new family law centers in Victoria and in Surrey. And I believe the Surrey office was doing satellite and remote services to the northern region of BC. So I'm aware of other aspects of Legal Aid BC's services up in Prince George, for example. I know there's a parent legal center. However, I do not believe that there was any physical in-person family law center services being offered until this new announcement.
One of the things your organization does is advocate for systemic change within our greater legal system. In your view, does the addition of these offices participate in that greater systemic change?
Absolutely. We've been advocating for equitable access for the lowest income survivors to legal aid in the province for well over a decade now. And our historical work was really, you know, looking at the legal right that low-income parents and caregivers have to access justice in our family law system. So to access representation, which needs to be, you know, legal aid that is subsidized, because as we know, lawyers are very, very, very expensive, hundreds and hundreds of dollars an hour. And for those who are escaping violent relationship, trying to get on their feet, rebuild their lives, often it's a lot of financial loss. We need to swoop in and provide as much unfettered access to legal aid for their protection and safety and access to the family law system. So this fantastic expansion really builds on a model established not long ago that looks at a new trauma-informed wraparound approach to legal aid. And it's also another great systemic shift in a particular area. The existing services are tariff-oriented. So you get a legal aid lawyer and you get a certain number of hours. And okay, when those hours are done, that is it.
Oh,
that's it. Yes. So the family law centers are really meant for those who are impacted by family violence and intimate partner violence, meet the income thresholds, so, you know, in financial need. And they're meant to provide access to wraparound or more unlimited legal services. So you have staff lawyers who aren't bean counting hours, who should work with somebody until they find meaningful resolution to their cases. So these new announcements and the innovation of a new center and in-person on the ground staff in the community of Prince George to serve the North is really building on a new exciting model in this way.
Your organization does a fair amount of engagement with people who are affected negatively by the system or by perpetrators of violence. And what you've been hearing for them through your engagement is a desire to have more accessible services further in the provincial North. Is that right?
Absolutely. Our membership does span the province. We obviously have more in the Lower Mainland, but we do listen very deeply to our members all around BC, Vancouver Island, the interior of the North. And we have been up to the North several times over the past few years doing in-person engagement. So going up there with staff and listening to people. And we have been talking to the policymakers about the need to ensure equitable access to services. And we hear from our members, well, that never came to my town, you know? Good luck to me trying to get that service. It's all weighted down in the Lower Mainland. But not only that, we also heard frustrations around parachute fly-in services, this notion that our geography is complex, so we can just sort of have satellite services coming in, or somebody comes in once or twice a year. We heard complaints through our engagement about that. They say, we don't want just some stranger from another part of the province to sort of come in and offer services periodically. We would like community-based services here that understand the local community connections to other agencies on the ground. So we've been talking about this, and that's why we're really happy to see the expansion of the family law centers in the interior and the North, which are two particular regions in need of more on the ground legal aid services and legal aid. Yeah.
Speaking of more remedies, in the press release put out by Legal Aid BC, they also mentioned that eligibility criteria has been expanded as well. This means that at-risk people can get help they need faster.
Yeah, and ultimately it means more people are eligible. And so we were happy to see that Legal Aid BC was listening when it came to the great need we have in our province. Sadly, you know, we know hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people every year are impacted by intimate partner and family violence and need these services, need to access legal aid. So they're low income and they're impacted by those issues. And so expanding the eligibility criteria to include parenting arrangements means that so long as somebody meets the other criteria, there'll be many more people who are eligible for this service. So before it was a little more limited, and we're just very happy to see that Legal Aid BC is moving in the direction of enabling more access at this time.
introducing parenting arrangements, does that essentially help a parent find extra care for their family while they are dealing with a litigious situation?
Yeah, in this case, it means so parenting arrangements would be like anything to do with parenting. You know, what is the schedule? Who gets Tuesday night and Wednesday night? And who's paying for soccer camp? And, you know, how are we communicating with the teacher? All of those things that need to be worked out to take care of kids every day would be that if you are impacted by family violence, intimate partner violence, you meet the income threshold for eligibility, and that and parenting arrangements is one of a number of sort of boxes that you can tick one of the boxes. If you tick that box, then you are technically eligible for the center. And if the center is full and you tick that box and the other boxes, then you should also be eligible for 25 additional hours of legal aid service. So when the centers are full, you know, there is something in place to provide extra tariff hours for those who need them. Yeah.
On June 2nd, 2026, the Prince George RCMP detachment announced that 47-year-old Prince George resident and former MMA contestant Ryan Timothy Chiap had been successfully convicted, who had earlier in April pled guilty to 2 counts of assault causing bodily harm and 1 count of assault in relation to intimate partner violence. In this instance, this individual was successfully prosecuted without the family law clinic being present here in Prince George. Mr. Chiap ultimately received a 15-month conditional sentence order, which is often akin to house arrest, and a 36-month probation order and a DNA order. We asked Corporal Jennifer Cooper of Prince George's RCMP detachment what happened in this investigation in order for these charges relating to family violence to stick.
This one was due to a number of factors, primarily a victim who was able and willing to stay with the investigation through to the court process, which can be incredibly difficult for victims of intimate partner violence, as well as enough evidence gathered by our investigators over a long period of time in order to provide a very thorough report to Crown Counsel to the BC Prosecution Service.
Corporal Cooper mentioned that it can be incredibly difficult for a victim of family violence to stick with an investigation and court proceedings for the entire duration leading up to possible prosecution. There are several factors and possible reasons that can influence this, but one of the ones that Vivica Ellis at the Center for Family Equity referenced earlier was the concept of litigation abuse. We asked Ms. Ellis to elaborate on this terminology.
You mentioned litigation abuse. Do you mind summarizing for our audience just what that is, what it could look like?
So I'm not an expert in this, but I do understand what it looks like. Sometimes when somebody, an abuser, for example, is using the court system to abuse somebody. So sometimes that takes the form of filing court orders over and over and over again. And it's a form of badgering. And it is deeply traumatizing, deeply upsetting to have to be sort of dragged back into court over and over and over again, sometimes for frivolous reasons, or sometimes somebody is sort of waging a campaign to make somebody look bad. And they're seeing how they can twist legal procedures, use lawyers to do that. And so that is a recognized form of family violence, actually recognized now in our Family Law Act and in general. So the family law centers are where there is litigation abuse taking place. They should recognize that. And we hope that in cases where that has become a very problematic issue, that those cases would gain access to a family law center and a staff lawyer to really recognize a pattern and get in there and talk to the judge, because that kind of behavior is extremely damaging, extremely detrimental, and it needs to be stopped in its tracks. And we've had people go for years and years with this form of abuse taking place. It's like the power and control transfers over to use of the legal system. For example, somebody will figure out how to run out somebody else's legal aid hours by sending their lawyer lots of emails, which they legally have to answer, doing all sorts of sort of a monkey business, you know, to really destroy someone else's access to justice or to make things so intolerable where they're really being harassed. They're actually using the family law system to harass somebody. So There was an enormous amount of work done in this area by organizations like West Coast Leaf and many others to daylight this issue and address it. And, you know, after a lot of hard work, we are in a better place where there's more recognition of it, but we still need more remedies.
One of the other pre-existing barriers that hinders prosecution of, or simply accountability for, family violence, according to the Government of Canada's Intimate Partner Violence Fact Sheet, is a hesitation to report the incident to the RCMP in the first place. Again, for a number of reasons, including fear of stigma or shame around the incident, fear of court system intervention, or even general lack of trust in the criminal justice system, among other factors. Regarding this, we return to Constable Jenna Moore of the Prince George RCMP Detachment's Domestic Violence Unit.
When you are approaching a victim of intimate partner violence in the context of being an RCMP officer, starting an investigation or following up on a charge, anything like that, is there a particular process or protocol that you follow to not further alienate or victimize or make an individual feel like they are under further threat, say, to not put them in another sense of danger?
Yeah, just within the RCMP, there is lots of training that members do take. Specifically, a term we use is trauma-informed approach when it comes to taking a victim statement, allowing them the space to describe what happened and try to prevent them feeling re-victimized in a way. So it is called trauma-informed approach that we use to the best of our ability to make a victim feel safe to come forward and give a statement to police.
When it comes to actually getting to that point, obviously someone who is a victim of intimate partner violence can feel very alone and unsupported in attempting to report the incidents of that violence. But there are organizations and different societies and so on locally here, and of course within the province as well, that provide support for victims of violence. Are there any that the RCMP tends to have a good relationship with as far as supporting victims of violence and seeking justice?
Yeah, here in the Prince George Detachment, we have a working partnership with Elizabeth Fry Society. They have a specialized victim services worker who works with the domestic violence unit here, who provides support and guidance to victims of domestic violence. Various resources and many different ways to support a victim if they don't have any outside support. But here in the detachment, we do work with Elizabeth Fry Society to be able to help the victim kind of overcome some hurdles that do come with the investigation steps. And then if it makes it to court, just the court process, and to be able to help them through that. If you don't feel comfortable coming forward to police right away, there is many victim services here in the community as someone that you could reach out to for some guidance and support in regards to that. If you don't have family support at home, reach out to a victim services worker here in the city, and they'll be able to help guide you, give you some support and resources here in the community to help you through that process. Here in the city, there's Elizabeth Fry Society, Native Friendship Center, even the RCMP website does have a certain link on the webpage that has definitions of intimate partner violence, how to report, how to support somebody if you suspect that they're going through that.
Would you include the PG Sexual Assault Center on that list as well? I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they work with victims of crime as well. Yeah.
I might add that after speaking with a representative, the Prince George Sexual Assault Center also offers one of their staff members to be present with victims of violence when they give their statement to the RCMP. Vivica Ellis of the Center for Family Equity emphasizes how important organizations like this are.
I'm not sure up in the north specifically who would be those intermediaries, but to go to a trauma-informed organization that has the ability to listen, to provide services in a way that really meets you where you're at, and then to help people navigate the complexity of systems that are very much built to exclude and not trauma-informed. In an ideal world, we would have many more advocates, because we know that systems are deeply traumatizing and re-traumatizing for a diversity of people, especially when you've already interacted with those systems as a child or a youth. And so we understand the harm and their lack of a trauma-informed approach, not just at the hands of the RCMP and the police, but all the interconnected systems, and also the harm of how they don't communicate and they fail people. Yeah, that's what I would say, is to go to those organizations that can do more proactive support.
The Prince George Sexual Assault Center is
incredible. Yeah, talk to them. Exactly. Yeah,
great. So the expansion of Legal Aid BC into Prince George and Kamloops alongside the eligibility criteria being expanded sounds like a step forward as far as a solution for people affected by domestic violence,
family violence,
gender-based violence, intimate partner violence. But further to that, what do you see as far as further solutions to this issue in the north of BC? What are you working on right now, or what do you think is realistic to see in the future?
The community knows best what it needs, and I'm down here and I'm in Vancouver, right? You know, I think our members who live on the ground in Prince George and communities in the north, and we have a long-term contractor, our Northern BC outreach liaison also. But I can share that I think across the board for all communities, particularly those, like I think of the smaller communities around the north who are more isolated, I think we're advocating when it comes to legal aid services to absolutely ensure that geography is not the inequity that causes inequitable access. We say we provide legal aid for those who need it in British Columbia. Our government and the Crown Corporation that is Legal Aid BC must work to ensure that somebody, if they're living in Bella Bella, they're living in Fort St. John, they're living in Carrimias, wherever they are in this province, they have an entitlement, same entitlement to those services as somebody living in Vancouver or Victoria or an urban center, and attention to that equitable access to ensure that, yes, it's challenging. Maybe it's more costly. It's challenging the logistics of offering services, but that can't be a reason for not going that extra mile, because otherwise we're implementing deeply inequitably inaccessible services. And I'm sure there are many in the north, many advocates, Indigenous communities, many who have sounded this alarm and make this point regularly. We're just very happy to see an actual center opening up in Prince George for legal aid, because we know there is need in every community, but for there to be a base in Prince George to actually also go to neighboring communities and drive around and be able to serve clients up there is absolutely what we should be doing, and actually what should already be in place. So I would say just more of that, more resources to ensure equitable accessibility for more rural and remote locations. We advocate for that 1,000% because we listen to our members.
If listeners have their own experience to share with your organization and hope that their story can contribute to the advocacy that you're doing to push for policy change in the province, how can they contact your organization and hopefully try to make a difference?
Absolutely. We are a membership-based organization, and because we are focused on poverty and ending child, youth, and family poverty in BC, and our systemic focuses are disability justice, racial equity, and gender equality, and we really work across a broad swath of policy as well, child care, housing, education, transit. But all of this work, all of the work we do is deeply led and informed by our members. So I would invite anybody who's listened to us today to please go to www.centerforequity.ca and go to our Join Us page. If you are a parent or caregiver and you've been impacted by inequality or low income, then we would invite you to be a member. And on the top of our website, we have an opportunity for anybody to follow us and keep up with our work and support our work. And so we do often have projects. We do research, community engagement, advocacy, and all of those projects are led by teams of 10 to 20 parents and caregivers who are impacted by that issue. We compensate everybody in all of our roles. So we have a lot of opportunities, and it's so unbelievably important for us to understand the diversity of the province. We are working on provincial policy, and we understand the necessity of deeply listening to people throughout this province, not just down here where there's more people. And so when we come up north and we hold focus groups and we hold engagements and people come out, we usually go to the Friendship Center in Prince George. Actually, that's where we've held our last few engagements. It's so fantastic to have local community members come out and help us impact that provincial policy from the perspective of those living in Northern BC. So please join if you're interested. There's lots of opportunity and we hope you do.
Speaking with CIFR Radio 88.7 FM, today is Executive Director at the Center for Family Equity, Vivica Ellis. Thank you so much for your comment and your time today. The Center for Family Equity advocates for systemic change within the province of BC's legal system, focusing on ending child, youth, and family poverty.
For a final comment, we turn to Jenna Moore of the Prince George RCMP Detachment's Domestic Violence Unit.
This topic, I feel like, is more and more entering the public conversation where people are acknowledging that, yes, this is an ongoing problem in our community, in our province, in our country, in our world. But as far as awareness, is there anything that you have seen as an RCMP officer that seems to be an effective method? What do you appreciate seeing being worked on in the community?
Just here within the city of Prince George, there's a initiative that started last October that's called Purple Light Nights, and it's just another way to increase awareness of intimate partner violence here within the community. And that committee that put that initiative forward involves many different organizations here within Prince George.
While rates of reported domestic violence rose in Prince George, Clay-Lee-Tenay from 2024 to the end of 2025 by 15%. A network of organizations and services exist in the community of Prince George, Clay-Lee-Tenay that work to directly or indirectly address family violence. Three available across the province mentioned in this story are, of course, the RCMP, Legal Aid BC's Family Law Clinics, and the Center for Family Equity. Also mentioned locally are the Elizabeth Fry Society, the Prince George Native Friendship Center, and the Prince George Sexual Assault Center. These resources and a few more are listed within the web post for this story on CFUR.ca and frequencynews.ca. Legal Aid BC has a location within Prince George's Law Courts on 250 George Street, and they were not available for comment in time for deadline on this story, but the Family Law Center can be contacted at 1-866-577-2525. While a physical office is opening in Prince George, virtual services will continue to be offered through Vanderhoof and Mackenzie Court registries. Staff there are able to connect clients with services beyond just legal aid, like counseling, Indigenous cultural supports, parenting support programs, settlement services, and victim services, all aimed at clients experiencing family violence. They can be reached at 250-277-0100.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFR Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.